Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante.
Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Andrea Flores, who's the Assistant Director of Recruitment at Florida State University. Andrea, I'm so happy to have you here today. How are you?
Thanks, John. So happy to be here. I'm doing great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And Andrea, why don't we start by me asking you to just give us a brief introduction about yourself. How long have you been in admissions and how did you end up in such a position?
I love this question because I feel like nobody ever grows up having dreams of working in college admissions. So it's always so interesting to hear kind of how we all ended up here. But I'm an FSU alumni. I graduated from FSU with my bachelor's degree in psychology in 2012. And then I went on and I got a master's degree in counseling, went into mental health counseling for a little while. And then as I became a mom and, started having my two sons, I had my first son, we really wanted something that was just going to give us more of a work-life balance, my husband and I. And I saw an opportunity to come in and work for my alma mater. And I was like, man, I had such a great experience at Florida State as a student. I had such a strong connection to it as an alumni. And so in 2017, I came in and started working in the Office of Admissions as an admissions counselor. And so I worked doing that for a few years. And then I moved into the assistant director role. I've been in this role for about 2 years now.
Well, that's terrific. And so as an assistant director and an alum, what sets Florida State University apart from other institutions, and what aspects of the university do you believe make it attractive to prospective students?
Sure. We're part of the state university system here in the state of Florida. We're a public institution. And I think one of the things that really sets us apart from the other, state universities here in Florida especially, is that we have this really great way of making a big university feel small, right? So students are going to come here, they're going to get that college experience that's steeped in tradition and legacy and all of that. They're going to have a huge variety of majors to choose from and activities to be a part of. They're going to have access to research and distinguished faculty and all of those wonderful things that come with being at a large institution, but they're not going to feel like a number here. And that for me was something that just was so important in my experience as a student. I was the first in my family to go to college. And so the process in and of itself was so just scary in a lot of ways. I didn't know what, you don't know what you don't know. And so I felt like I came onto that campus and I never once felt like I was one of, 42,000 students. I always felt like staff and faculty were always willing to help me and direct me and, had my best interests at heart. And so I think we're just this really wonderful balance between that big university, but with a small university feel.
Well, I definitely believe what you said. You're a big university that makes the students feel like they're on a small campus. And I say that because I recently read that your retention rate is an amazing 94%, which is high compared to the national average of about 70%. So what's the secret in keeping so many students so happy and wanting to return after that freshman year?
Yeah. So we actually have some new stats for you. So we actually just have another increase in our retention rate. We're at a 96% now.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Super, super exciting. And you know, I think it really feeds into that piece, right? Our student support is there, right? We want students to be successful at Florida State. And so whether it's through academic support or, you know, professional and career development, you know, whether it's just that social and that emotional piece, right? That transition from high school to college is a really big one for a lot of students. And so we truly put that at the forefront of all of our programming. Our first year, especially, we've got two kind of initiatives, the Engage 100 initiative, and then we have Living Learning Communities as well. Engage 100 is essentially a way for students to get connected to all those great things that we have happening on campus, because it's amazing to be able to offer a lot, but that can also be really overwhelming for first year students. And so we really do try to incorporate pieces into their first year experience to help them get connected to, you know, pinpoint the areas that they really want to focus in on or things that they want to take advantage of and offer that support. And so, you know, I think that they feel supported and they want to come back. That's what's going to get them across that stage of graduation.
Well, that's awesome. And you talk about your academic and your social supports along with your Engage 100 initiatives. So yeah, you know, a student comes to a school like FSU, 42,000 students. Could we just unpackage it a little more? Is there a course? Is there something more to help students acclimate to the FSU community?
Yeah. So Engage 100 is that. It's an actual course. So in their first semester, every student will select an Engage 100 initiative. A lot of them are kind of based on an interest area. You know, if you're interested in business or you're interested, you know, maybe you really like community service. There's a bunch of different opportunities. And so basically students just get to pick the one that works best for them. And then they take this course with other students who have similar interests. It helps them to meet people, helps them to explore those options. And then they also get to see all of the different things that, you know, we have to offer and kind of what university life is like. And so they absolutely get to do that.
Well, that's terrific. Again, with 42,000 students, and of course, they're coming from so many different high schools, which I would imagine are a lot smaller than 42,000 in terms of their overall population. It's great that you have initiatives like that and you break it down by interest area, whether it's academic, perhaps students are into humanitarian efforts. So you're putting them together with like-minded students to help them with that transition from high school to college, which of course helps with that retention rate of 96% because you're building community right from the start. So that's terrific. Yeah. So of course, Andrea, the application review process is something that is so important for so many students and their parents as they're getting ready for the college process. Could you walk us through the general process of how applications are reviewed at FSU, including the key factors you consider when evaluating applicants?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do what's called a holistic application review at FSU. And I'm sure that, you know, that's a buzzword that lots of people hear. but basically all that means is that, you know, no one element is going to guarantee a student admission into the university, right? It's a combination of a bunch of different factors that we're looking at and that we're considering as we're reviewing this information. And so what we do at Florida State is we mirror our application review after our university seal. And so if you see the seal of our university, there's these three torches. The three torches have the Latin words Viris, Artis, and Moris on them, which stand for strength, skill, and character. And so essentially, those are kind of those three general ideas that we're looking to get from the review of the application. In that first torch, in that strength piece, is where we're looking at the academics, right? So we're looking at the classes that a student is taking, how rigorous are those courses? We're looking at GPA, we're looking at grade trends, right? Has the student been consistent over their 4 years of high school? Was there a dip? Was there, you know, an increase? Kind of what does that look like? The second torch is going to focus in on their skill piece, which is essentially a student's place to tell us what they're doing outside of the classroom. And so for some students, that can be kind of those traditional things like clubs, sports, things like that. But for other students, we know that circumstances are different. And so this could also involve employment. It could be family responsibilities that a student has, community service that they're a part of, you know, kind of whatever they're doing outside of the classroom is really what we want to see here. a big thing for us at FSU is that we never want to penalize a student for something that is outside of their control, right? So if a student can't necessarily be a part of clubs or sports because they have family responsibilities or they have other obligations, we definitely want them to let us know that. And we want to be able to consider that as part of the application review. And then the third piece is our character torch, which comes primarily from the essay. Students will submit a personal statement as part of their application. And we really lean into that. That's really our space to kind of fill in the gaps between just the, you know, test scores and the GPA and the things like that. And it allows us to get to know the student a little bit better. And so we put all of that stuff together when we're coming up with the admissions decision.
Well, we appreciate that holistic review. You talked about the fact that that means that you're not looking at only one element. You're looking at a combination of all the elements that make up that marketing package or that application. I appreciate you explaining your three torches: strength, skills, and character. And I also appreciate you talking about the fact that if a student is working or they have other family obligations, perhaps they have to take care of an elderly relative or maybe a younger brother or sister, it's important to indicate that, because of course that might be the reason why you're not participating in so many other after-school activities at your school because of those family obligations. So it's very important, students, to make sure that that is clear in your application. Otherwise, you're leaving it up to the college admissions representatives to speculate as to why you might not be part of any clubs at your school. Would you agree with that, Andrea?
Absolutely. You know, I always say that, like, we don't know what we don't know. We're not standing in front of the student, and with, you know, we're not a school that does interviews. And so this is essentially your interview, right? It's thinking about creating your application as a whole package of who you are and telling us the whole story, because we're able to, in that holistic review process, understand, you know, oh, well, like exactly like you said, we're missing some activities here, but oh, this is the reason why. And we can kind of fill in those gaps. Another really important time when that comes into play is if there's like a significant dip in grades, right? So if there's one year that you had a particularly rough year in school and it was because of some external factor, you know, maybe there was a medical issue or there was some sort of family issue, let us know that, you know, put that, find a place in your application to share that information, because there is a human being reading it. And we do want to be able to, you know, take that into consideration when we're reviewing.
Well, I love how you talk about telling your whole story. And you mentioned another great example, which is if there's a dip in a grade, maybe you got that B plus in mathematics in 10th grade or whatever it is, within the application, students, there's always room to explain that. Or again, you're leaving it up to, as Andrea said, the human being reading the application to speculate. And you don't want to do that, right? If there are circumstances, again, going back to caring for family members, or there was a reason, like you said, a medical issue why there might have been a dip in a grade, remember to explain to the student. It's very important as part of the overall application. And of course, Andrea, the number of applications schools are receiving are on the rise and continue to be on the rise. And so with an increase in applications, how do you determine how many students to accept or even deny when you don't necessarily know how many of these applicants will actually attend if accepted?
Absolutely. Literally the hardest part of this whole process is trying to predict something that we have no way of knowing, right? Because we got 70,000 or 79,000 applications this year. And we know that obviously all of the students are interested in Florida State, but the levels of interest are very different. And there's really no way for us to be privy to FSU being their top school or FSU being just one of the schools that they happen to add to the Common App just to see what happens. And so it is incredibly difficult to predict that and to try to figure out how many students we should admit to be able to get to an actual number of students that we're comfortable at. The other big thing that we've seen over the past few years, especially, is that as our profile has increased and as the applications have become more competitive, the students that we are admitted are students who are going to be admitted to several different places. And so they're going to have a lot more choice in their decisions and kind of what they're going to do, which even further complicates our ability to be able to predict who is actually going to come. We rely really heavily at Florida State on data, historical trends, things like that. We have a phenomenal data team here that helps us break down and predict kind of how many students we need to admit in order to get to a class size of about 6,200, which is where we're comfortable at. FSU has kind of strayed away from that fully online format. And so we're not really looking to grow our freshman class. we really want to be able, again, to offer that community feel and have students on campus and where we're able to really support them and where they're able to engage with other students. And so we're really comfortable at that 6,200 number. And so some years we overshoot it a little bit, some years we hit it right on the head. But again, it's just really about relying on trends and trying to make as educated of a prediction as we can.
Well, that's awesome. 79,000 applications for approximately 6,200 seats. And of course, you have professionals that work on campus to look at data and historical trends. Do you know offhand, what is your yield? In other words, for people that might not know, the yield is what's the percentage of students that actually get accepted that accept that offer and attend FSU?
So we're at about, well, as far as students who apply and are admitted, we have about a 32% admit rate.
Great.
And so we're admitting around between 16 and 17,000 students in hopes that that will get down to about that 6,200 number.
What are the different ways a student may apply to FSU? For example, early decision, early action. And is there a benefit to applying one way over the other for the purpose of being admitted, but even for things like merit-based scholarships?
So nothing at FSU is binding. We don't have any sort of early decision binding types of deadlines. What we do offer is something called early action, which is a priority consideration specifically for our Florida students. So again, Florida, the students here start school very, very early. They're usually ready to go pretty early on in the application process. And so we have an October 15th deadline for Florida students specifically. After that comes our regular decision deadline, which is open to any out-of-state students and then, of course, any Florida students who didn't apply in that first round. And that is December 1st of the senior year of high school. There is no difference in terms of priority, if you will, between the early action and the regular decision groups. Typically tell students that as long as they're applying within one of those two cohorts, that they will probably be eligible for merit-based scholarships. There'll still be plenty of housing available, all of that stuff. It's just a matter of when they can get all of their documents in, get all of their stuff together and into us. After December 1st is when things get pretty competitive. I would say that we keep our applications open until March. So there's about a 4-month gap in there where students can still submit information to us. However, those students are considered on a rolling basis. And I will tell you that, you know, because of the amount of applications that we receive, we typically have very little space left at that point in the process. So I always tell students, if FSU is one of your top schools, try to apply by that October 15th if you're here in Florida. And if not, that December 1st should be your date.
Hi, John. This is Gabby from Fordham University. The FYI Dormify blog totally saved me during move-in. With all the dorm room do's and don'ts, how to get along with a roommate, and advice for getting involved on campus, Dormify helped me with so much more than just my dorm. I highly recommend college students to check out Dormify's blog because it answers so many of your college questions. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Gabby, for sharing your thoughts on Dormify. For those of you listening, be sure to check out our show notes where you could find our Dormify affiliate link and our most updated coupon code where you can save 15% on most Dormify products. As a reminder, our podcast does receive a small commission for purchases made through our affiliate link, but rest assured, we only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit you, our listeners. Thank you and best wishes to all. Well, I appreciate that. And I'm going to just repeat. So you have an early action deadline of October 15th, and that is for your Florida residents. You also have rolling decision with a deadline of December 1st. Now, you mentioned that after that, there's rolling decision, but we don't recommend that because by that point, a school like FSU, which is so, so popular, you're not going to probably have so many spots at that point. So students, if you're a Florida resident, you absolutely want to make that October 15th deadline. If not, regular decision, that deadline is December 1st. Now, I was curious, as a public university in Florida, and of course, you mentioned the difference between an in-state and out-of-state student. So does FSU have a cap on the number of out-of-state students it can admit? And how does the admissions team approach the balance between in-state and out-of-state students?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned earlier, we're part of the state university system, and that kind of comprises 12 separate institutions. And so our mandate across the 12 institutions is an 80-20 split. of in-state versus out-of-state or international students. But that is across the whole system. So we don't have specific caps for Florida State, if you will, to say that we can only admit this many students. Just by the nature, I think, of our admissions process, we do tend to yield a lot more in-state students. But in terms of the application review and the competitiveness, there is no difference. A lot of, you know, in-state students obviously are closer to us. And so that really helps. The cost piece is also a big factor. And then Florida has something called the Bright Futures Scholarship, which is a merit-based scholarship that is awarded to our high-achieving students here in the state that essentially covers 100% of their tuition and fees. And so we also do retain quite a few of our high-achieving Florida students within our system.
Well, that's terrific. So again, for the Florida State University system, which comprises of 12 schools, it's about a 20-80 split. Andrea, how does FSU ensure that its admissions policies, including those related to test scores, align with the university's mission and values as set by the Board of Governors?
Sure. And so, you know, we're a public institution, and so we really are bound by the decisions and the policies that are set forth within the Board of Governors. Test scores has been a really big discussion point, especially since 2020 and the onset of COVID and all of that. I think we were the only state, if not the one of very few states, that never went test optional. So we remained test required throughout the entire process. You know, I think the key really in this is always to make sure that we have the focus as students, right? Students are always at the forefront of our mind. And so when we think about balancing what the policies are with kind of what our university's missions are, it really is bringing it back to what's going to work best for our students and how can we best support them through this process. A couple ways we do that, you know, I think that the holistic review process does really help because when it comes to test scores, especially, I know a lot of students really struggle with that component. And the benefit of a holistic review is that we can look at that number in the context of the rest of the application and kind of make a decision based on that. We're not looking at minimum test scores. We're not looking at anything like that. It really is just about one factor amid the rest of them that we're looking at. And then I think the other piece that we really try to do with our students is remain transparent. So we have a lot of on-campus programming, right? If a student comes for a tour, we talk through the whole admissions process. We let them know what we're looking for. We let them know really what the important pieces of the application are. We do year-round tours on campus. And then we have virtual sessions that students can come to that are weekly. So if you're, you know, if you're somewhere that you're not able to access campus, you can do that. We also attend a ton of college fairs, high school visits, things like that, just to really make sure that students have access to somebody within the Office of Admissions. You know, I know that there's a whole lot of stuff out on the internet about what you should do and what you shouldn't do and how this works and how it doesn't. But, you know, it always is our goal to make sure that students can communicate directly to us and can do that easily. And so I think that's something that we've really tried to lean into to really be able to manage all of that.
Well, we appreciate that overview. And it's interesting that based on your Board of Governors, like you said, you never actually went test optional. In other words, the 12 schools within the Florida State University system always required test scores, which is what continues to be a fact. So I know that you receive applications from thousands of high schools throughout the country and beyond. You mentioned 79,000 applications, which is amazing. So when reviewing applications from so many different schools, how do you take into account when one offers its students all the AP or IB courses imaginable, while another high school may only offer a small fraction of those offerings and perhaps even gives limitations in terms of how many you could take in junior year and senior year, for example? Yeah. So how does the application review process differ for students from these varying high schools?
So I think a couple things. I think the first thing is that we're very well aware that, you know, every state, from state to state, from school to school, the way that things are offered, the way that things are weighted, you know, in a GPA and things like that are completely different. And so when a student is applying to Florida State, we're automatically recalculating that GPA to kind of put everybody on the same playing field. And so that is our first bit. Again, we never want to penalize a student for something that's outside of their control. And, you know, having courses that are offered is important. So we would never say that a student has to have 5 AP courses or the specific number of this certain type of course, because we know that not every school offers that. And so that would be totally unfair to do. But we get a couple of different things, tools that we can use to familiarize ourselves with the specific school that the student's applying from. The first is a profile. So a lot of high schools have, you know, a 1 or 2 page document that they submit to colleges where they talk about what their curriculum looks like. They tell us what types of courses are offered. You know, if they have college level courses, you know, what is that curriculum? Is it IB? Is it AP? Is it dual enrollment? And so we can kind of get a good idea about what is offered to that student and then whether or not the student is taking advantage of those offerings as specific to the school. And then we also use something called Landscape. So the College Board, the people that do the SAT, they have a tool that colleges can use called Landscape, which again, just gives us some context, tells us about the neighborhood the school's in. It tells us about how many AP classes are offered. It tells us a little bit of information on test scores, like an average test score for that specific school. And so again, it's just tools that we can use to really familiarize ourselves and make sure that we're not judging students against each other from schools that are offering very different types of experiences. And rather we're trying, you know, really trying to look at the specific student and whether they're taking advantage of what their school is offering.
Well, I appreciate, number one, the fact that you talked about the school profile. Some people don't understand, because if you're applying locally, in other words, if your high school is within 20 miles of whichever college you're applying to, those college reps probably don't have to read your school profile, because they're probably extremely familiar with everything your high school has to offer, because I would imagine that they're getting many applications from that high school that is so close. But if you're applying to a Florida State University, right, 79,000 applications for a freshman class of approximately 6,200, they are literally reviewing applications from thousands of high schools. So students and parents, the school profile is so important. Your school profile, if you haven't seen it, Google it or go to your guidance office and ask for a copy. This way you get insight in terms of what the admissions representatives are seeing when they're reviewing your application. And like Andrea said, and many others before her, they review your application in the context of what is offered at your school. Is that correct, Andrea?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I also appreciate the fact that you mentioned the College Board's Landscape tool. I think that's phenomenal. By the way, I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions in the show notes. Should you want to include any other links, just send them to me. And of course, I'll make them available to the students and their parents. I also want to touch upon something else that you said about recalculating the GPA, which does make a lot of sense to me. And so many schools do this because, again, 79,000 applications, so many different ways of grading, whether it's numeric, alpha, weighing, not weighing the courses and what have you. So when you recalculate the GPA, are you looking strictly at the course subjects, or are you taking all courses, including the electives, into account?
So for the most part, we're just looking at core courses. So that's going to be your English, your math, your natural sciences like biology and chemistry, your social sciences, things like history, geography, government, economics, and then languages. So a big thing here in the Florida State system is that students are required to have taken at least 2 years of the same world language when they apply to our school. So they had to have taken that in high school. And so we consider those as core curriculum. The only electives that we will consider and calculate are anything at the AP level, the IB level, or the ACE level. So every single course at that level will be considered in the recalculation, and it will get additional weight on it as well because it is that higher level course.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Andrea. And I'm glad we followed up on that question regarding the GPA and how you recalculate it. Thank you so much. And what support does FSU offer its students to ensure that they continue to be successful once they're on your campus? I ask this question not only for students who may have had an IEP or a 504 while in high school, but for all of your students. And I know you do an amazing job, 96% retention rate. So it's not only all of the academics that you offer and all of the activities outside of the classroom, but in terms of supports, there's got to be so much at FSU to ensure that the students continue to be successful once they're on your campus.
Absolutely. And so for those students specifically with the IEPs or the 504s, we absolutely have a phenomenal office called the Center for Accessibility on our campus. They're going to work with you to make sure that you get whatever accommodations you need to be successful. And so whether that has to do with coursework and, you know, testing, or whether that has to do with housing, meals, food, anything like that, they're going to be able to help you there. We also have this phenomenal program. It's a bridge program in between high school and college for students who are the first in their family to go to college. And so I mentioned earlier that I was a first-generation college student. So there's a lot of kind of unique struggles, I think, that a lot of first-generation students go through. So our CARE Summer Bridge program is a phenomenal program that students will participate in for 7 weeks in between high school and college. Really just gets them set up for success, gets them connected across campus. There's a lot of fun stuff as well to help them meet people and just know where to go for questions about whatever they may have throughout the process. Outside of that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I think that our career and our professional development, our career center is phenomenal. So whether that's helping students in the exploratory phase, I know a lot of our students come in as undecided. We call it exploratory at Florida State because it just sounds so much nicer. But we have a phenomenal, very structured exploratory advising program that'll help students get shadowing opportunities and just opportunities to really dive in and figure out exactly what it is that they want to study at Florida State. Just really make sure that they get the most out of their experiences. And then we have a phenomenal university counseling center that works with our students. And so, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it's a big transition, especially in that first year. And so a lot of times students can really struggle through that. And so we have some wonderful counselors on campus who can work with students virtually, who can work with students in person, really however they need that assistance. And they can make sure that they have everything that they need as well.
Well, this has been such a comprehensive conversation. FSU, so lucky to have you, as were we. Before I get to the last question, I must ask, Andrea, is there a question that I didn't ask today or a topic that I didn't bring up that you'd like to talk about now?
No, I think this was super thorough. I think the only thing that's kind of been on my mind over the past few years especially is just that college application process and the stress that it's put on a lot of students and a lot of families. I think one of the things that the pandemic did was really highlight a lot of the like mental health struggles that young people are going through. And I just kind of want to, you know, say that a lot of times families get very wrapped up. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. But, you know, the process doesn't need to be stressful. This is a really phenomenal process for a lot of students. It's kind of a launching point for students to move into adulthood and, you know, into their career, figure out what they're passionate about. And so I just kind of, you know, implore families and students to try to kind of remember that and know that there's a place for everybody, that college fit is so, so important, you know, that rankings and things like that don't always tell the whole story. And they definitely don't tell us where is going to be the best place for your specific student or for you if you are a student. And so really just doing the research, taking campus tours, trying not to be kind of swayed by other people's opinions of what you should or shouldn't do, and just making sure that the student can kind of take the lead on this process. I have talked to so many 16 and 17 year olds who are just completely burnt out at this point because they're trying so hard to do everything and trying so hard to, you know, and it's all to get into college, you know, but that's just the starting point, right? That's supposed to be the part where you're doing the research and you're leaning in and then you go and you are able to experience all of this stuff. And so as rather than focusing in on the, you know, the application and the, what do I need to do and how many activities do I need to participate in, you know, really focus in on that piece of like finding the best place for you as a student and a place that you know you're going to be the most successful, because ultimately that's going to help with those, that stress. It's going to help with those, you know, mental health things that we really are seeing in a lot of the students nowadays.
Well, I really appreciate it. And you touched upon the last question, which always is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents going through the college admissions process?
Yes, I'm ready. First, apply early. So like I said, we've got 79,000 applications this year. The earlier that you apply, the more space that's going to be available, the higher your, you know, chances of being offered admission. October 15th is the deadline for our Florida students, and December 1st is the deadline for anybody else. Highly recommending applying as soon as you can. The second piece of advice, the essay is so, so important for us at Florida State. Start thinking about that essay as soon as you can. Start thinking about what you might want to share. It is very open-ended, and I think that is terrifying for some 17-year-olds because they're like, just tell me what you want me to tell you. And really, this is your space to kind of share whatever additional information you feel like we should know about you, right? Again, we don't know you. We don't get to meet you. And so this is really that space to fill in those gaps between your grades and your test scores and your activities. And we know you're so much more than that. And so really lean into the essay, make sure that you spend a lot of time on that. And because it can really make the difference in a lot of admissions decisions. And my last one is for the parents. And so this kind of goes back to the whole mental health piece and the stress of this. I was doing a panel probably 3 years ago now, and I had a colleague of mine give a phenomenal piece of advice. As you embark on this college admissions process and start going through this, set one day aside out of the week where you sit down with your student and talk about college stuff, whether it's tours or whether you're finalizing the college list or, you know, you're getting into the nitty-gritty of the applications and you need to know if they've submitted what they need to. Have one day out of the week that is just the college day, and save all your questions and save all of your stuff for that day. It's going to allow students the autonomy to be able to kind of take the lead in this process and really make sure that they're doing it for themselves. But it's also going to stop you from creating conflict with them of like you being nitpicky or you're, you know, putting too much pressure on me or leave me alone or don't do this. And so I thought that was such a phenomenal piece of advice. And I share that with parents whenever I can. Find that one day. This is a big process, but it's not the only thing. And everyone will be okay at the end of this process. So focus in on that.
Well, that's awesome. Those are tremendous pieces of advice. And like I said, FSU, so lucky to have you, as were we during this conversation. I'm so happy, as I know that this is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate the process. I do hope to have you again, Andrea. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, John.
Pleasure. And to everyone out there, good luck with the college search. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
I want to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the CEO and founder of Prep Expert. Sean, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, John. Just wanted to do a quick shout out for an amazing deal that we have for College Admissions Process podcast listeners. We're offering 30% off all Prep Expert SAT and ACT courses and tutoring. It's live online. We've got the best score improvement guarantees in the industry. You'll get taught by 99th percentile instructors. And you can save 30% off when you go to the show notes of the College Admissions Process podcast. Grab your discount code for 30% off and click the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Sean. So great to have you again. And to everyone out there, please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission. But rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all and best wishes.